Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chris Evans here. A big thank you for downloading our Virgin Radio podcast. Coming up on this week's edition of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Ed Skrein chat the upcoming Maleficent Mistress of Evil. Sienna Miller discusses the fantastic new film American Woman. Marie Forleo tells us about her new book Everything is Figure-Outable and shares an incredible story about her mum, plus Sophie Dahl charms us with her brilliant new children's novel, Madame Bidubida. Plus loads more great guests. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy.
12 Years a Slave, Game of Thrones, The Lion King. Between them, our next guests really know how to choose a project. Mm-hmm. Together, they star in the bewitching Disney sequel Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, which is out next Friday. So please, go wild for Hollywood's latest power couple, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Ed Skrein.
Oh, I didn't realise. They've taken over from Brangelina.
Yeah,
this is good,
first.
Isn't it?
We need to have a name of our names combined.
Okay, so Chiwetel and Ed. Chew-Ed?
Edgewine?
Edgewine's quite good. I like that. That's very good. Anyway, so you were both at the premiere last night. What was it like? What are premieres like nowadays? Just down the road here.
Just at the IMAX. It was wonderful.
Yeah, come on, tell us. Come on, more than one. I want more than wonderful.
Well, it's there was a load of people out
there.
Were
there limos?
There were cars. There were limos in London.
Were there red carpets? Was there a red carpet?
Red carpets. Yeah, okay. There was, you know, loads of us out there. Loads of people dressed up. It was great. I mean, it's got such a huge following, Maleficent. So it was. I loved it.
Yeah, the Disney premieres are bigger than other premieres. You know you're on a Disney train when you turn up at the premieres. They're bigger and jazzier and kind of more exciting.
Because the bigger the premiere, the bigger the launch, the more heat it has and the more chance it has of catching light, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Not that Maleficent needs to, but of course everything needs to. You can't take anything for granted. Okay, so looking at the first movie, which I didn't see, took $758.5 million at the box office. You two do seem to have the golden touch when choosing a project. How so?
Well, I mean...
Where's the inner diviner within both of you?
Yeah, I think it's all about just storytelling, you know? And I think that the projects that I choose is, are related to that. I just feel like if I'm moved, if I'm touched, if I'm engaged, if I think it's a ride, then I'm excited to get on board.
See, I like that. If I think it's a ride, that'll do, won't it? That's the answer there. Okay, what about you, Ed?
I think it's a combination of using my somewhat limited intellect and using my instincts. You know, it's like you analyze the project, you know, and see who the director is, who the producers are, who the writers are. You look at the text, and then after that I kind of just
pray.
Go with instinct.
Go to church a lot. That does help as well. Have you seen the time lapse of Angelina in makeup?
Yes.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, we were living that every day. You know, my first makeup test was 10.5 hours, Chris, you know, and then after that we got it down to about 5.5. I think the fastest we ever did was 4:02 or 3:57.
That's for you.
Yeah, that's for me.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, it does work. All the money's on the screen, which is great.
Mm.
But how long did it take for Angelina to become Maleficent then?
I'm not sure, actually.
I think it's about 3 hours, three, 4 hours, yeah.
What about you?
Mm. Yeah, same. 3 hours,
really?
3 4 hours, yeah.
So what
5 hours in the beginning.
It's almost like they hollowed out your cheeks, Ed. What did they do to you?
Well, they add these prosthetic pieces to your cheekbones.
Yeah.
And then they have to, you know, but I also add prosthetic pieces on my torso, on one of my arms.
Six-pack.
On my shoulders. Yeah, they printed on my six pack every morning over the beer belly, and they just had to do so much, you know, the ears, and then they have to spray it. I mean, you're standing there at 7 a.m. with Alan Partridge on a laptop in front of you while they put on your
horns. Is that what you did?
That's how I got through.
What about
most
you,
days.
How did you get through prosthetics in the morning?
I just stared into the nothingness, you know, for 4 hours every day.
Were you quite zen?
I was in preparation mode, let's say.
By the way, if you haven't seen the time lapse of Angelina getting ready, we've put it on our website, haven't we? So is there a link there? Is it on Instagram? On Instagram, okay, it's on our Instagram. It's brilliant. It's a great viral trailer for the movie. Do you have rap parties on a movie like this? Do you all stick around and celebrate?
I'm sure there was one. I wasn't at the rap party. Were you at the rap party?
No, I had to go off and do another movie. And I'm not such a rap party person, actually.
Have you ever been a 24-hour party person, or have you all been 2 to 4 hours? And
no, I've been a 24-hour party person, but not with work people.
I see. Very good. Yeah. All right. Very impressive. Okay. Now, you're not starstruck necessarily by the Michelle Pfeiffers and the Angelina Jolies of this world. By the way, Sienna Miller's coming on.
Great.
Okay. So many people have offered to go and collect her from reception this morning. It's just not funny. But starstruck-wise, particularly, do you tell anybody you've worked with and you thought, ooh, today's day?
Well, you know, I loved working on this for exactly that. You know, Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, Angelina Jolie. I'd worked with Angelina before and had a great time. We did Salt together a few years ago. And I just think, I think...
That was a while ago now, 12 years ago?
Yeah, 10 years ago, something like that. Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, obviously... terrific actresses, amazing actresses, but and with Angelina, you know, I just, her whole world view is so incredible.
I know you said that,
and it's just a wonderful, and she's so invested in all of the projects she does. It's just a wonderful place to be.
How does she find the time to make movies that take quite a proper movies nowadays?
Yeah.
And all those children.
Amazing.
Were they at the premiere last night?
Yeah.
And we worked so hard. It was such a physically demanding shoot, but she would go off on the weekends and do these amazing trips around the world and charity work and stuff. And you know, she's such an admirable woman.
Well, lovely to meet you too. Again, thanks for coming in.
Thank
good luck
you,
with
sir.
You.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Chitel's got this. He's going to be the next Bond. Basically, that's it. He can't talk about it.
That's not true.
But there is something he can't talk about, and it's not fair. Because you want a super scoop. You can tell us something quick before you leave, Con.
Yeah, I've got a movie called Midway coming out next month, which is really exciting.
You're off to Hawaii.
I'm off to Hawaii. It's where we filmed it. It's about the Battle of Midway in the Pacific Theatre in World War II. It's a real-life battle that was incredible. Woody Harrelson, Patrick Wilson, Aaron Eckhart, Luke Evans are in a movie with me. And it's a piece which I'm very proud of, you know. Both my grandparents fought in... the British Army and British Air Force, and you know, the bravery of the men is commendable
and
respectable,
and
the women, of course, and we show that in the movie as well.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil is brilliant. It is, but you can't take your eyes off anybody in it or any of the action all the time, and the 2 hours that last will just disappear in front of your eyes. Ant Cinemas a week tomorrow, Friday the 18th of October.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From prowling through London in layer cake to the plains of the Mississippi Delta and Cat on a hot tin roof, she can turn her hand to almost anything. Her new film American Woman is unleashed tomorrow, so please welcome a lady that's all killer, no filler. It's Sienna Miller.
Very good. You're happy with that one, are you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I bet you are. I bet you are. And Dave was at the head of the queue. He was fighting to be at the head of the queue with Sam Pinkham this morning to go and collect Sienna from reception. How many people did go down to collect you this morning? Do you
know? About three, I think.
Okay, well, there were 300 on the shortlist, let me tell you. How are you, Sienna?
I'm fine. I'm still getting over the all killer, no filler, Sienna Miller.
Yeah,
it's the best thing ever. I'm good.
So, American Woman tomorrow in cinemas and digital tomorrow. That's good, isn't it?
I think so.
It's a similar release. No, we've done a lot of these. They work.
I think that's what they're doing, aren't they?
Definitely work.
Yes.
100% they work. Okay, so, Sienna, let's talk about the film straight away. It is a brilliant, brilliant film. Quite a misleading title, especially as we're playing the bed of American Woman underneath.
Yeah.
You tell as much of the story as you want to tell on the radio so people watch the movie.
Well, it's about a woman who, as the movie opens, is 32. She has a 16-year-old daughter, and her 16-year-old daughter has a 2-year-old son. And the 16-year-old daughter goes missing, and she's quite reckless at that time. She's sort of reliving her youth that was lost because she was a young parent, and she's catapulted into raising her grandson without knowing what happened to her daughter. So that kind of sets it up. But it's really about the resilience of humans, I think, and the bravery of this woman is really what it's about. I don't think you're left incredibly depressed, although it's really a hard subject matter, because she's really brave and resilient.
It's so interesting because she's so rubbish as a human when you first meet her, for understandable reasons, but she's broken. She's a broken person.
Yeah.
And she's pretending not to be broken. And then when she has a reason to be broken, she's anything but. in the end.
Yeah.
So it's really quite strange, isn't it? It's a reversal of how she feels from the beginning to the end. Now, the first 10 minutes, you don't know anything's going to happen to her daughter. And I thought, this is... Because I didn't know what it was about. Because I never know what movies are about before I watch them. That's how I like to see them.
Yeah.
And my wife saw it the night before and she watched it again with me last night. She said, oh, it's great. You're going to love it.
Oh.
And so we're watching the first 10 minutes and I think, okay, it's a story about four women, you, your character, your daughter... your sister who lives over the road and your mum, who all have a lot, everything in common and nothing in common. Because you have everything in common because you're from the same family, but you have nothing in common as far as your life's concerned. So that's how it starts. But then obviously there's this massive twist. And Churchill said, you know, if you're going through hell, keep going. That's pretty much what she does, isn't it?
Yeah. She does. And it's, I think it's kind of deceptive because it looks like it might be a mystery and it's really not that. It's about what is left behind in the wake of something like this. And people somehow manage to put their lives back together, even if it's messy, in some semblance of a life and carry on. She's really brave and resilient and stoic. And it's sort of a character study of a woman, which I think is really great. Certainly as an actor, it is.
Look at the reviews for this. The New York Times, the performances are excellent and Inglesby's dialogue largely rings true, but while the movie's indeed considered and conscientious, it's also very careful. That's the thing, it's so careful because you're always thinking it could fall off its own tightrope, but it never does. But it's always teetering on the brink. Doesn't risk going over any edges itself. The Los Angeles Times says, at first, the bones of American Woman feel familiar, with its titular character's sharp elbows pushing us away. We've seen dramas led by brash women before. The one here is played by Sienna Miller, though. Displaying more rage and range, I like that, more rage and range in a single film than some actresses get to show in their whole careers. What an opportunity. And what a lovely thing to write about.
That is nice. That is. It was. It felt, I wonder if I'll ever get anything that good again. It felt like such a complete...
Oh, was it one of those?
I might have peaked, which is really, really... I mean, it sort of had everything. It was. I find her really funny. I loved how brash she was. I love that I got to go on this journey and begin as one thing and really end as something completely different. It just felt... like a very full experience.
So, how come you're so good at American accents? I was going to think, well, because you were born in New York, yeah, but you left before you were one, so that wouldn't be it, would it?
My dad had has an American accent, so maybe growing up with that sound, I think I can just do
them. Is he a New
Yorker? He's not. He's from Pennsylvania, he doesn't sound like this. But I like accents. It's about having a good ear.
All right. Now, it's nearly a girl gang show film. There are some brilliant blokes in there as well. I love your brother-in-law. He's the best ever.
He's so good.
Because you have the biggest rat in the world. And then he's like your protector in the end.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's great.
And this isn't a true story at all, is it?
No.
Okay. I thought it might be. So I read up afterwards. I thought, is this true? It could be true, but it's not true.
No, I think it was inspired by, there was a woman coming out and sort of attacking the wife of a murderer and saying, I need to speak to your husband. He killed. I think that scene was based on something true and that inspired the film. That doesn't make any sense to anyone who hasn't seen it. But Chris knows what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's rather wonderful. And also, I didn't know when it was going to end because I didn't know how long it was, because that's another thing. I don't really want to know much about the film.
You're brave, aren't you?
Well, no, because I just love film. You know, and I know that if we've got... It depends on who... The team only booked brilliant people, so I know you're not going to have chosen a bad project. So it's always something to look forward to. So I never know how long it's going to be, so I didn't know what might happen. And it does go on a bit longer than I thought it would, which is great because I thought, oh, something's going to happen, and then something does happen, and you think...
That's what it was all.
I get that now, and I like that.
Oh, good.
It's got the non-closure bit to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, life goes on, and where's it going to go next? Deb 2.
Exactly. That's it. Almost like an end of part one, which is brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely brilliant. So, what are you doing next today?
I think I've got some more radio than I've got this morning, and then I've got Graham Norton
with Philip Willoughby.
With Philip Willoughby, yes.
Okay, Philip
Willoughby.
Give our love to those guys and Graham, and I can tell you honestly. It's 1 hour 40, I think, your movie is in the end. 1 hour 42, something like that. You will not go wrong. You will not regret giving those hours and those minutes to this movie, American Woman, in cinemas and digital tomorrow. Sienna, thank you.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's a Sunday Times best-selling author who's making her first foray into the world of children's books. The brilliant Madhu...
Madame Badoobadoo
is out now. Oh, I knew I was going to do that. Is out now and here to tell us all about it. It's the purveyor of perfect prose, the lovely Sophie Dahl.
Morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Sophie, this is a beautiful book. I read it yesterday at home. It's not, I would say it's not quite a short story. It's a bit long, which I quite liked.
Yes, it's an odd length. It's long form picture book, but I split it up into three because I didn't want it to be that book that parents dread,
well,
that their kid picks at nighttime.
It up into three.
It's broken up into three.
No, it's not. It's broken up into four.
Three and a half or four?
Oh, three and a half. No, fair enough. OK, it's part one, part two and a half,
yes.
Part four.
Yes.
Which is technically four.
Yes. OK, all right. You win. You know more about my book than me.
No, because I loved it. OK, so we have the little girl who's the principal and a stranger comes to stay.
A stranger comes to stay. So it's the story of Mabel, who lives in a seaside B&B, and her mum and dad are the managers of the B&B, which is called the Mermaid Hotel. And one day, a stranger, an enigmatic old lady, walks in, and she's wearing feathers around her neck, and she has a very growly voice, and she's unpleasant and possibly a bit unsavoury. And she might have a dog that's peeing on a suitcase. And that is Madame Badoobada.
I know your grandpa famously wrote in that shed at the bottom of his garden,
yes,
didn't he? Where do you write?
I write at the kitchen table.
How is that? With the traffic, the kitchen traffic.
It's noisy, and then I complain that everyone has disturbed me.
Ah, good excuse.
So it's a ploy.
I see.
So I start at the kitchen table, and then often I migrate upstairs, because normally at the kitchen table I will have a feral dog or a cat or some creature climbing on me. So I end up upstairs where the doorbell doesn't ring in quite the same way. And
See, you even talk like you write, where the doorbell doesn't ring in quite the same way. That's a great sentence.
Yeah.
Right, you got to use that, Soph. That's great. Okay. Becky in sunny Ribble Valley says, Sophie's new book is definitely top of my list for my gorgeous niece, Mabel. I'm sure she'll love it for obvious reasons. And the reason your book, in my opinion, my humble opinion,
yes,
not my hyperbolised opinion, my humble opinion, ends up being a bit longer than a short story is because of you have some lovelier signs in it. And obviously, you know, that is a stream of consciousness. When do you decide to leave those in, and how much do you have to take out before it just gets a bit too gobbledygooky?
It's a good question. I think it's the beauty, one of the many beauties of children's books, is you have to get to the point, so you can't bang on too much. So I think in my grown-up books, I might bang on a bit.
Right.
But I think in children's, you have to be more succinct. And it's one of the many great things about them. There's a book that if you don't know of it, you should read, and it's by Catherine Rundell, and it's called Why We Should Read Children's Books, Why You Should Read Children's Books, Even Though You Are So Old and Wise. And it's all about the lessons that great children's books teach us,
right,
that we forget about when we're grown-ups, and they are that people make it through adversity, that wit matters, that empathy matters, that compassion matters. And you forget in the sort of the classics of your childhood that that's where you first learnt about that stuff.
Give kids tips on writing, making stories up for homework. You just gave a great tip off the air there.
So I think tips for writing stories off homework. I think don't worry about your ending. I think that endings don't have to be endings. They can be somewhere in the middle, because life keeps carrying on. Other good tip I have is to really think about what happens to you during the day and write interesting things down. So if you notice a suspicious character, write down what was suspicious about them.
Where do you write all your ideas down? Anywhere?
I've just got notebooks.
You just get them down?
Yeah.
A back of the hand sometimes?
Well, no, they're just in weird. I find them sort of mixed in with shopping lists,
right,
and odd. Yeah.
Good for you. And how much of your time would you say you spend writing?
Now,
every day?
Pretty much of my time, yeah.
Did you always think you'd end up doing this?
Well, it was what I always wanted to do. And then I had a sort of series of happy accidental
right,
career forays. And but it was always the thing that I was sort of doing.
Good
in the background.
You.
I was a big reader. That was the thing I did first.
Well, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Are you happy?
Yeah.
Okay. Sophie Dahl is delightful as always, and her book is great. Sophie Dahl's Madame Badoobada. Lauren O'Hara illustrates, and it's out for you to buy for Crimble now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've heard from three guests already, but there's loads more still to come. Aisling B tells us about starring in the upcoming Netflix comedy Living With Yourself. Katie Brann brings in her brand new book, I Carried a Watermelon, Dirty Dancing and Me. And the legendary Suggs delves into Madness's first ever official book, Before We Was We, celebrating 40 years since the release of their debut album, One Step Beyond, in their own words. All that and more, but first, Dapper Dave, who's next?
An award-winning comedian, writer and actress that's just released her first non-fiction book, part memoir and part homage to her favourite film, I Carried a Watermelon, Dirty Dancing and Me, is out now. So please join us in saying, nobody puts baby in the corner. It's the lovely Katie Brann.
Good morning, Katie.
Hello, thank you.
Okay, so I started reading your book yesterday.
Yes.
Right, because you're on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you, that's more than some have done.
No, but I always do. I like to.
Thank you, okay, I appreciate
so
it.
So I start reading the book and thinking, oh, this is nice. She's going to parallel her book with Dirty Dancing. Then you read on. This is a love letter, a 200-odd page love letter to Dirty Dancing. It's about you, of course it is, but it is about Dirty Dancing. And Dirty Dancing doesn't come and go. Dirty Dancing is in basically every paragraph.
Yes.
Yes, it is. And I make no apologies for it. It's fascinating. I mean, the first thing you should do is bag the rights for the genre, which is the book of the film.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because other people do this with their favourite films, and this is a great idea that other people can do.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Chris, but I worked as a runner for your company 20 years ago.
Which one?
Ginger.
Right.
And for anyone in media and entertainment I'm going to take business advice from, it's going to be you, quite frankly. So I think I might get on to a media lawyer immediately on leaving this building.
Well, back in the day, we made a few quid, so that's what it must be.
Yes.
It must be the magic of our past.
I know.
Joint venture corporate future.
Yes, excellent.
What jobs did you do for Chris's company?
Well, I mainly got lunches and coffees for the development staff and the production staff. And I mainly, it was when you were on Newman Street, and most of my work was going from the office to the big post office on Newman Street.
We were flying.
And back again.
Newman Street days, we were flying.
Was that, stop were him they posting the good letters those days?
We weren't, but we weren't thinking, we were just doing, weren't we?
Yeah,
we
it was a very busy
environment. We didn't have to think of things. Things just happened.
Yeah.
And we thought it'd be like that forever, and it wasn't.
Nothing's like that forever, except right. Dirty Dancing.
Right, okay. So you first watched Dirty Dancing when you were how old?
11.
Where were you when you watched it?
I was at home in my house in Amersham in Buckinghamshire, and I watched it on my own. It was in 1990, 3 years after it came out, came on the telly, didn't really know much about it. I love films with dancing, but I thought, oh, I'll give this a go. I haven't got anything else on, being 11. I just sort of didn't move for the whole thing. I felt very excited, exhilarated, but the main word I come back to was afterwards I felt invincible. I felt like I could do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really relate. Everyone I think assumes with women and Dirty Dancing that it's all about Patrick, and it is to some extent, but really it's about Baby. Really it's about the lead character. You sort of identify and fall in love with Baby, the 17-year-old lead character, who is a very active heroine. She makes all the action happen. She takes every opportunity. She's completely fearless. She doesn't think twice. She just leaps him with both feet. And she seduces him. She makes it all happen. And I think as a young girl, you just come off the back of that film and you just think, I could do anything.
I mean, in a way, it was way ahead of its time.
Yeah, I think it is.
Very much so.
And I think actually it's a rite of passage film for girls. And there aren't many of those around, which is partly why everyone sort of converges on this to some extent.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a great piece of entertainment. Obviously, the dancing's amazing. The music's amazing. The chemistry between the two of them is amazing. And I watched it every day for 3 months because I finally managed to tape it off the telly the next time it was on.
Did you watch it once a day or twice a day sometimes?
Once a day after school.
Right.
And then it was confiscated for my own good.
By mum?
Yeah, by my dad.
There are some subjects in it that are quite big for an 11-year-old. They deal with some big stuff.
There is some big stuff. The substance of the film, the termination of an unplanned pregnancy and things. So that sort of stuff was very important to the writer. Anyway, it was taken off me just because I was getting obsessive with it and I needed to do some homework. Anyway, I found it, continued to watch it every day until it broke. And then kind of my life moved on a bit and I continued to watch it every now and again, but that was the heat of my obsession, okay, between so 11 and 13.
That's how you and Dirty Dancing became an item.
Yes.
And you're still an item today.
Yes, very that, much so.
So you pitched,
we've rekindled.
So you pitched the idea
extent
of the book. Yes. Right. And I don't think we should say where the book ends up. Because okay, that does, you know, it's brilliant. You think, no, really? Are you really going to do that?
Yes.
And then you go and do what we're alluding to or talking around.
Yes.
And then it gets better and better and better, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, do read the book. There is a chapter at the end. I went on a trip and it was a like a
guess where she went, everyone. Anybody got any ideas where she went? She went, and everyone was very nice to there, wasn't it?
It was great.
Imagine if you hadn't seen Dirty Dancing.
I know.
What would your life be like then?
Well, I mean, there were some great films around about then, but perhaps it would have been something like Labyrinth and my life would have ended up a lot weirder.
But it's true, isn't it? It literally became a blueprint for your life.
Yes, it has. And I loved The Sound of Music. I loved Mary Poppins. I loved Dirty Dancing. And what I realised was these are films about women who turn up and sort some people
they
out.
Do.
And I think
Nanny McPhee. Yeah. I love Nanny McPhee.
The original Nanny McPhee.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that has definitely informed a lot of my life. Certainly in terms of grabbing opportunities when they come along, trying to just do things fearlessly without worrying about looking foolish. But also this sort of sense of like, yeah, I'm going to come in and sort this out and all of that. And I watched it on my 40th birthday this year, which was how this book came about. My husband said, what do you want to do tonight? Because we didn't have a babysitter that night, etc. We had other things planned later. But he said, what do you want to do just tonight after we've had a meal? And I just suddenly said, out of the blue, I wasn't expecting it, I want to watch Dirty Dancing. And then I thought, do I? Oh my God, yes I do. And we just got it on the telly, like you can now. If I could tell my 11-year-old self, you could just go, I want to watch Dirty Dancing, and there it is. But I really concentrated on it. And as I was watching it, I was sort of thinking, I want to have a bit of a reckoning with my teenage self, because I was very sort of driven, quite charmless.
Well, you said
ambitious.
You've always been 40 as well, though.
Yeah, I feel like I've always been 40, so it's quite a relief to be 40. And I just thought, God, there's a lot in this film it says a lot. I sort of enjoyed it as well, but I thought, I think there's a lot more to say here. And I pitched the book probably a week later after my birthday, and HQ, the publishers, bought it the day after. And that never happens. That sort of stuff never happens. So I think that shows the sort of strength of feeling about the
fantastic
film.
Fantastic. I don't know whether it'll catch light straight away, the book, but it will catch light.
Yeah, it feels like it's building.
Yeah, and it might be tomorrow, yeah, and it might be next week, but it's good. This book will sell forever.
Oh, thank you.
No, it will sell forever. And the film was re-released in 1997, because you talk about it because of Conan O'Brien, who knew that he was such a fan of the film. But this, you know, this is it, isn't it? You know, you're giving everybody a chance to go, no, I love Dirty Dancing too. It's like, I'm Spartacus. It's like, it's the same kind of thing. And you're going to get all these Dirty Dancing groups throughout the world now popping up, because you've vocalised it in the page of this book.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I mean, I did look around. I thought, I bet someone's done this already. Yeah. And I had a look and there was nothing. I thought, right,
best
I'm
ideas.
In.
I was like, what? Really? You're joking?
I know.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Skye on Virgin Radio.
She podcasts, she acts, she jokes, she writes. She's the master of all and jack of none. Soon to be seen starring along not one, but two Paul Rudds in the new Netflix series Living With Yourself. Please welcome the hardest working woman in show business and self-confessed avocado enthusiast. It's the brilliant Aisling B.
Good morning,
hello.
Aisling.
Hi.
Welcome, welcome.
Hi.
Beware watching one if you only have half an hour. If you have to be somewhere, be careful. You might want to ring fence the full 4 hours that you're going to need. I pretty much got on with 3 hours yesterday. It's fantastic. It's one of those Netflix, Amazon, Sky Original kind of HBO kind of things that is sort of unbelievable. But now people are making shows based on unbelievable seed ideas, but making them
domestic and relatable.
Relatable. And it's like,
have you explained to anyone what the show is about?
No, you don't say. Oh, yeah. So and is it because, right, People are just better at writing now, or think extraordinary things are more believable because of the crazy world we're living in, or because we're searching for something else, which this film sort of whispers to us.
Yeah, for me, it's answer three, please, Chris. Yeah, yeah. Searching for meaning. Yeah. I think that the show essentially is Paul Rudd's character Miles is down in his luck. He's not having a great time. Our marriage is struggling a little bit, and someone offers him this quick fix to go to a spa, which will make you your better self.
Yeah.
What he doesn't realise is what they do is, and this isn't too much of a spoiler alert, it's all in episode one, that they clone him and they don't kill off the original properly.
That's so what they usually offer. For
so what they normally
grand,
do. So the clone
grand.
Doesn't realise they're a clone. They're just walking around as their most amazing self. Yeah. So suddenly there are two hims. And I suppose the question is, with all of our, is there a possibility as humans that we could be our better selves? Because even if you were to make someone biologically better or perfect in whatever way that would be, all of the bits of you that make you a human, that are you at your core, at your soul, all of your messes and complexities, is that who you are? And do the people who love you for all of those bits, with all of your messy bits in the way? So that's kind of what it explores. But like the I suppose, concept is a little Black Mirror-y. Someone gets cloned. But the show itself is quite domestic in that it's about a relationship with him with himself and him with me.
So Paul Rudd.
Yes.
You play his beleaguered wife. Well, you play Miles's one beleaguered wife and Miles' two quite happy wife, surprised wife.
I don't know if beleaguered is the right word, because I feel beleaguered plays into that old kind of like, oh, the wife, blah. Like she's a whole person in her own right.
But she's also a nightmare.
But she has her own stuff going on as well. Yeah. I think that sort of old trope of like, me's a nightmare, what are we going to do with him, is sort of like boring. And so like even to play, to get in as scripts, and she's a whole person in her own right.
Yeah.
And I suppose what some, I was interviewed by a journalist recently who'd only seen episode 1 and 2, and they were like, oh, and so, you know, you often say you don't want to play like the wife or the girlfriend. I'm like, oh, wait till 4 and 5, because suddenly the car turns around. Well, and does everything from her point of view. And she's, you know, she's no angel either. And it's a communication problem between the two of them. But to paint one person as an angel and one person as a devil, or sort of a put upon wife, and I'm sort of that old chestnut, I think, is driven a bit thin. Because what you end up doing then as an actor and a performer, you end up always playing like, sigh, well, if only he would come to me, then everything would be fine. As if I'm
guys,
not.
Can he get off that PlayStation?
Yeah.
Can we please? Can he get off the PlayStation
guys,
so we can have
on.
A kid?
Yeah. I'm just trying to advertise this lovely light can of drink, whatever it is. In but I think, you know, you come with all of your complexities and stuff as well. And so we have to. There's a beautiful book by this woman called Esther Perel called Mating in Captivity. And she's a sex therapist who has this amazing podcast. And it's called Where Should We Begin? And you listen in on her doing a live couples therapy between two people. And again, a lot of the time it falls into that beleaguered and, oh, I just lost my job, so I have no money and I feel less of a, and you know, so the kind of the tropes of what you hear. And then slowly she unpicks the two of them, and suddenly it's not a man and a wife, it's two people who are trying to coexist and get along with each other. And where someone might compensate or be trying to be the best person, but isn't essentially listening to the person with them. And it's just, I like the idea of it being two people in a marriage or relationship. You're essentially two friends trying to live with each other.
Yeah.
Never mind the gender stuff. And so that's kind of what I loved about this script when I got it through. I was like, oh, he has given me as an actor and a person the respect, and his wife, and I don't think Paul would have done it. He's got a very dynamic wife. He's a writer and creator in her own right. They wouldn't have said yes to a show that was just like, this schlub, when's he going to get his act together? You know, which I think is also patronising to men when those parts come up as much as they are to women.
I mean, we must point out, Ashley, it is a comedy as well. Because that's it's really important that
Without
we mention that,
doubt.
Isn't it?
Why, did you get a load of angry tweets and just were like, oh?
No. Not at all. But it is a comedy. I think it's just important to point out.
Oh, yeah.
Because often, you know, comedy, best way of conveying any kind of point. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely brilliant. It's so simple. Not much happens in every episode, but that's irrelevant, isn't it? Because, you know, if you really sort of focus in on anything that's important in life, not much does have to happen. And you can still talk about it forever, I suppose. That's
the human
thing.
Condition, basically. Yeah. And you're watching yourself. It's what I like to watch as well. And I think with streaming services, you get a bit of space to
you
watch
do?
Stuff now.
It's podcasts. It's
visual
podcasting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Paul Rudd, he plays like his twin, if you like, his clone twin.
Yes.
So he's on screen with himself, which used to look rubbish when they started doing that back in the 80s and 70s. And then quite right. But you really can't tell.
You can't tell. And it was mad to film, because there's no one way of doing it. So like we were finding out as we did it what would be the best way. So basically, Paul would essentially do a scene. Say if there are three of us in the scene, Paul would do, we would do the scene together, and we would all place where he thought he was going to be and do it and record his lines, then put an earpiece in. Then we would all wouldn't be allowed to move. They'd get a techno dolly, this kind of crane, to come in.
Say, was there ever a stunt Paul, a human stunt Paul?
There was sometimes, but to be honest, Paul didn't want to act with another actor because the other actor wouldn't do what Paul would do.
Right.
So it was more like, I was saying yesterday, it was almost like a CSI detective. You know in CSI when someone walks around a scene is like, she must have moved from here and then over there and then that's where they found the body. that was Paul, but just acting with himself with an earwig in, and he'd be looking at places where he remembered he had acted beforehand.
Right, Living With Yourself Netflix from Friday, a week today. It is brilliant. There are eight half-hour episodes, but be prepared for a full... You know, it's about 3.5 hours all in, I think.
Yeah,
watch
well, they wanted to make it like one long movie, essentially. So that's kind of what they're
doing. Absolutely fan flipping tastic.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Madness of the band that never failed to get you moving. They're celebrating their 40th year in the business with the release of their first official book, Before We Was We. So without further ado, please welcome another human being that hasn't seen Dirty Dancing. It's the one and only Suggs.
Right, Suggs. Well, either we form a club and we remain steadfast, or we get together this weekend and watch the damn thing. What do you reckon? What's it going to be,
I'm
big boy?
I'm for forming the club, man. I ain't watching that. I ain't watching that.
I really want to watch it now.
You should watch it. It's a genuinely great film. I think people dismiss these sorts of things a little bit out of hand.
Would you reckon, I mean, between us, do we have the clout to get a private screening somewhere? Yeah. We could sneak in disguise.
You've got to watch on a big screen first off, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so. That I mean, it's just a genuinely great film, and I think sort of sometimes people dismiss it a little bit too easily for the wrong reasons.
But a lot of people go on about it being the greatest film of all time as well, which is always a bit sort of...
Yeah, I mean, there's been various articles about that, but I've just written a whole book about it. So
sorry.
No, that's all right.
No, I think it's a great film.
I didn't, yes, exactly. I felt you were being led into some sort of dreadful diplomatic trap there. I thought I'd better just...
As if someone would waste 6 months of their lives on
I'm just going to give you a little ladder to climb down, Suggs, that's all.
I do beg your pardon. No. Well, I shall be straight down to Waterstones after this.
You can take that. I'll sign that to you. Yeah, that's a
but the thing is, see, I was quite happy to stay in our little steadfast group of two, and maybe, you know, it could grow, it might not grow.
And throw it out there.
But then you read the book and you want to watch it. That's the point. You read the book, you want to watch the film.
A lot of people
are
saying
that. That's the problem.
Yes,
that is my problem now. That is my issue.
It's not a problem. You're going to love it.
Stay in touch, Chris. Stay in touch.
So I've been reading your book as well. The five of us have been reading the book. We got 5 copies sent earlier on in the week. It is Before We Was We. Now, it's a verbatim book. What that means is members of the band have been interviewed by somebody somewhere, and I suppose tape recorders have been switched on, and it says, okay, tell us what you can remember from whenever you want, but let's start as early as we can. Was that about it?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a few, 2.5 books written about the band. You know, this sort of success that we had and the chronology has been very well recorded. So being the 40th anniversary, we thought we'd go right back to the beginning. And it seemed to us more interesting to talk about how we met, why we met, and what became the band, as in, you know, the characters there involved.
And you see, and it's funny because all the ingredients are there. And you, I mean, I've written down at the beginning of the book here, and this is a massive generalisation. OK, so punk plus skinheads at the time, plus nicking clothes from Oxfam, plus you just about managed to be able to knock out See You Later Alligator on the way home from a pub, plus reggae equals madness. Sort of.
But yeah, throwing the odd laundrette and ice skating on Hampstead Ponds. But, I don't know myself. I mean, we talked about, should we be interviewed collectively? We thought that's all going to get a bit across. So what is sort of nice, I think, about it is you'll find the same, you know, we'll be talking about the same gig in Hope and Anchor and become 7 completely different opinions of what happened.
It's a different take on the same
thing. You know,
thing.
I did some of my first stand-up at the Hope and Anchor on Upper Street in Angel,
indeed.
And they were always like, this is where Madness used to play. And then we got turned into like a stand-up
so
gig.
Funny.
Myself and Nish Kumar, and we all were like messing around there
it's
starting
like the Enterprise,
off.
This is where Amy Wannis used to play pool. Yeah, it's the same kind of
that
thing.
That was where I started. That was my first gig, the Enterprise in Camden
really?
As well, as a stand-up.
On the corner.
Yeah.
Well, I went back to the Hope and Anchor not so long ago, and it was a bit like that going back to school. You know, it was tiny. I think 40 people, we can't imagine 20 people.
But at the time when you're so nervous performing for the first time, 4 people may as well be like the O2.
It felt like 4,000. Mm.
What was the most important early gig for you?
Well, funny enough, Heavy Petal, a flower shop in Hampstead High Street.
Heavy Petal.
I've got to say, there were more bouquets than fans, but we were going down a storm when a big gang of teddy boys came in at the back and they weren't particularly impressed and started lobbing everything to get their hands on. Roses, chrysanthemums, huge chunks of Oasis, the green foam, not the band. And our keyboard player's older brother was in a band called Bazooka Joe, who were like a sort of rock and roll band. He jumped up and did Jailhouse Rock. And the teddy boys dropped the buckets and started happily driving at the back. And I thought, hang on, we're getting something.
That sounds like such a moment in a movie.
Yeah.
Hey, this kid's got something.
Movie in my mind. No, so many, Chris, so many.
Okay.
I mean,
and punk was going on. You were a massive punk fan, weren't you?
I I lived just up the road from the Roxy. I didn't really know what was going on. I was about 16, but I just happened chanced upon that phenomenon, which was, yeah.
Very interesting book. Part of the book, rather, is the passages about you being a recognised skinhead band and then the National Front trying to hijack you, trying to own you. Massive issue at the time. But what they didn't realise is that your music, the music you were playing, wasn't white, you know, right-wing propaganda. It was Jamaican. So they were barking right up the wrong tree there, weren't they?
Yeah, it was a big irony. I mean, it wasn't very pleasant for sure. You know, there was a period when we'd come out to see a sea of people zigeiling. You know,
oh God.
Me and Carl used to jump in the crowd for better or for worse, mostly for worse.
What, to try and sort them out?
But just to talk to them. You know, I mean. And we got in trouble a bit because one time we said, look, I don't mind if they come because I'd rather they understood what it is we're trying to say than be ignorant about the fact, you know, that they think what they think we are. But, I mean, it was great going on a two-tone tour and being with the Specials. Obviously, the Specials just had the very slight advantage of having some black people in their band. But, you know, if these characters couldn't understand, we were playing black music.
Well, they saw what they wanted to see and nothing else.
And fortunately, it fizzled out relatively quickly. And I don't know what happened, Oi Oi or some old, you know, stuff started after that.
Before you go, so what does Suggs do over a weekend nowadays? What's this weekend?
Well, I'm going to Whitstable tomorrow, actually. I've got a big family reunion. My wife's family Whitstable. From down there. Yeah, going to the pub called The Sportsman. I don't know if you know it.
Love it. No,
couple
I don't.
Of brothers.
A few times.
You know everyone's going to turn up at that pub tomorrow now. You've given away your exact
damn.
Location.
Yeah.
And yeah.
By the way, they're playing a secret gig.
Everyone
Whitstable. Also, I must forget, I mean, that book before we was with, there's an audio book. I said I keep getting it wrong. I've spent all last night rehearsing this. There's an audio book and it's got a new Madness track on it. Thank you very much.
That's rehearsal
that's
for
good.
You.
So you dump the book, keep the song.
All right. Yeah. So she's got to go. Thanks,
Chris.
Everyone.
Thank you, mate.
Boom.
Woo. The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
The mere mention of his name brings thoughts of quality and class. He's enjoyed a spectacular career and thankfully for us, he's taken photos of it all. Here with copies of his new photo book and memoir, My Life Behind the Lens. Please welcome the best of the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the snap happy, Mr. David Suchet.
Good morning, David.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Well, I'm all right. I'm just about to get a cold, so it's a great time to be on radio, isn't it?
Yeah, but you see, you can still do it because you've got all that technique. Yeah. You talk about your voice training and your exercise in your book. How often do you do those exercises? Because I did think when I was reading it last night, I thought, oh, I'm always looking for throat tips.
Well, I do them every day.
So what do you do?
I do flexible exercises for my tongue and my lips, breathing exercises, and voice production.
All right. Okay, and it runs in the family, being able to project and to talk in public, doesn't it?
Communicators.
You and your bros.
Communicating,
okay.
Yes.
So and obviously everybody gets a mention in the book. It's you describe it because it's a photographic memoir. It's a written memoir, but it's not gimmicky in any way. It's beautiful is what it is. The photograph on the front, I'm presuming you didn't take, unless it is some kind of sort of analogue selfie.
Actually, that photograph on the front of the book is when I was just about to go onto the set in the series press.
Right.
And I saw myself in the mirror my trailer.
So it is a selfie.
And it's a selfie.
Because they said the first selfies were like self-portraits by Van Gogh and things, because they were in fact selfies. But you've done a selfie here, good for you. So let's talk about photography first of all. Cracking photographs in it all the way through the book. I'm sure you've taken millions of photographs in your life, inspired by Granddad Jim.
Yeah. He put me on his knee at the age of 8.
Yep.
Taught me all the technical stuff about photography and cameras, and then sent me out to photograph, and then gave me notes on all my pictures with composition, exposure, speed, etc. And then told me later, as I was growing up with my camera, that the most important lens that you can ever have on your camera or use is the one God gives you, your eye.
Right.
And you photograph not what you see, but how you see. In other words, you respond emotionally to an image or something that you just go, ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
And then you photograph what made you go, ooh. And so it's an emotional response rather than a clinical, I must get this photograph correct and right.
Now, having been involved in a couple of books and having to set out pages of copy, that's one thing. But to organise and compose a book that has photographs in it as well, you've done all the heavy lifting for us, you and your publisher or your editor.
Yeah.
It must have been hell on earth to which photographs where. Do we do a double page here? Do we do a couple of side photographs? You know.
Well, that's where they've been brilliant. And the actual photographs, but to be honest with you, were chosen with me by a wonderful friend of mine, Robin Sinner from Leica. And we went through all my photographs with the publishers and tried to get it very eclectic, very different, because I don't have a particular style.
Right.
I don't do portraiture only. I don't do landscape only. As I say, I photograph what I react to emotionally, which can be anything. Even in the book, you'll see a glass leaning against a wall.
Yeah.
Why did I photograph that? Because I looked at it and went, ooh,
yeah,
I love that.
And once you start looking, once you really start to pay attention to things, if you go around art galleries and things, things start to come alive, more alive than they already are, perhaps.
Yes.
Which is so exciting. And depth, there's more depth. You can almost dive into them. You can sort of breaststroke your way into them if you want to, can't
you? Yeah.
Do you take all the photographs in this book?
Yeah, yeah.
Every single
one? Not everyone, because there's one picture of my grandparents that I couldn't have taken because they just got married. All but right. Otherwise, everyone is my own, yeah.
Okay, and your favourite is one you took of your wife in Venice, waving, looking very Helen Mirren-esque, if you don't mind me saying. Is that all right to say that or not?
That's I thought
I'd say it.
That was lovely.
She's waving to someone.
My little grandson.
Oh, my goodness.
Who's behind me, yes.
And the look of love there.
Oh, well, we adore him.
And that blue Venetian sky, gorgeous. Oh, is that a river taxi you're on there?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Living the dream, David, living the dream.
Well, it was the only way to get to the mainland.
No, I know, but come on, it's still cool, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You do have a lovely picture here of the leaving present you were gifted.
Oh, which, let me see it.
There you go.
Oh, look at all those little things, all those little trinkets.
And we've seen these on screen a lot.
Yeah, you've seen them every time.
Just describe what we're looking at here, David.
Well, you've got a little tiny miniature coat rack, a toast rack. You've got one of the collars I wear. You've got my shaving utensils. You've got my cufflinks. You've got my studs. You've got my ring, etc.
See, now you're saying mine.
Oh, yes.
You're not saying Poirot's.
No, you see, there it is.
Oh, the lines are blurred. There you go. You fell into my dastardly trap. But you need to... It's great. It's, by the way, if you love acting or you want to inspire somebody who wants to get into acting... It's a great book for that as well. You talk about settling into a character is like a gear change in your day. Tell us about that.
Well, what tends to happen, and it's completely involuntary, because I play these big, big theatre roles. They're wonderful roles I'm given. But it can be, if I'm doing a 7:30 performance, I'll be walking around with my wife in a shop or something like that, and all of a sudden I can literally, like a click of my finger, the character will click in, and it's like a gear change.
Right.
I suddenly found myself looking at the world through the eyes of my character.
Back to the eyes. Yeah. Back There's to the most important lens.
Yeah.
David, great to see you again.
Lovely to be
okay,
with you.
Okay, awesome. David Suchet, Behind the Lens, My Life. It's out now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Are you listening to this whilst on the way to a job that leaves you unfulfilled? Do you want to make a change in your life? If so, you need to listen closely to our next guest. Her book, Everything is Figureoutable, is just the kickstart you might be looking for. Please welcome the superstar life coach without reproach. It's Marie Forleo.
Good morning, Marie.
Good morning.
So I saw you on the telly with...
With Mark Manson.
That's right, yes. I did, because he came in here talking about his second book.
Yes.
Which has just been out a couple of weeks. And whilst researching that, I went online and saw your interview with him. And I said, who is this woman? And you've had your own TV channel now for quite a while, haven't you?
Yeah, almost a decade.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
But what I loved about your interview with him, it was so precise. And sometimes when... so-called life coaches or personal development coaches are interviewing somebody who's written something which is quite profound, they sort of get in the way of the interview because they want the interviewee to know how much they agree with them, or you know what I mean? They sort of step over the interview.
Absolutely.
And you so didn't do that. And I thought, oh, here's another one of those interviews. I know what's going to happen here. Because I like people like Mark Manson and yourself when they're just talking.
Yes.
You know, I think they're at the best. But you honestly, the best kind of those interviews I've ever seen.
Thank you so much. That means the world to me.
But you're not on to talk about your TV channel. You're on to talk about your book.
That's right.
Okay, so here we go. This is already, by the way, a New York Times bestseller, everyone. Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it. So, Marie Forleo, everything is figure-outable. How to write another book like this? How do you decide how to write it? It must be like chefs writing cookbooks. How do you make it different? What are you offering here that we may never have read before, or we might be need to be reminded of?
Well, I think, first of all, it's such a simple idea. And in its simplicity, that's where all the profoundness comes from, because anyone can use this idea. It's just three words. Everything is figure-outable. Yeah. And I think it activates a part of your brain that searches for solutions rather than problems. And goodness knows, right, in our world right now, we've got more than enough problems to go around. Personal problems, there's over 300 million people in the world right now that suffer from depression. In the United States, suicide rates are at a 30-year high, so people are in pain. So when you have a simple phrase like everything is figure-outable, it's a quick way to get us to start moving in the right direction. And I felt like if I could communicate this effectively, honestly, you know, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, which I hope doesn't happen, I could leave this world going like, I did my good work because I gave people something they could actually use.
Did you come up with the phrase figure-outable yourself?
My mom.
Oh, actually. Come on, tell us about her. Tell us about your mom.
She's such an interesting character. So my mom grew up in the projects of Newark, New Jersey, for the daughter of two alcoholic parents. And she learned by necessity how to stretch a dollar bill around the block like five times. And when I was a young child in New Jersey, one of my fondest memories was sitting at the kitchen table on Sundays with the Sunday paper clipping out coupons because she loved to teach us how to save money. She also loved to teach me about the free stuff that brands would send you if you saved up the proof of purchase. Do you guys have that?
Yeah.
So one of her prized possessions was this little transistor radio, was shaped like a Tropicana orange, that she got from Tropicana orange juice for free.
I want one of those.
Right? So I'm going to send you one, actually, Chris. So I have like 30 of them now because everyone's purchased them off of eBay and they send them all to me. So there was a little red and white straw sticking out of the side. It was her favorite thing. Anyway, as a child, I knew how to find my mom somewhere around the yard of their house by listening for the sound of that tinny radio. So one day I'm walking home from school and I approach the house and I hear the radio off in the distance. And as I get closer, she is actually on the roof of our two-story house, perched very precariously with her little orange radio next to her. And I'm like, Mom, what are you doing up there? Is everything okay? And my mom, she's like, Ree, everything's fine. The roof had a leak. I called the roofer. He said it was going to be at least $500. I said, screw that. I'm going to fix it myself. Another day, I come home from school and I hear the radio off in the distance and I find my mom in the back of the house. She's in the bathroom. I push open the door. There's like dust particles in the air. There's pipes sticking out of the wall. It looked like an explosion went off. I said, Mom, is everything okay? What are you doing? She's like, Ree, I'm fine. The tiles had some cracks in them. I didn't want the bathroom to get moldy, so I'm retiling the bathroom. Now, you guys, you got to understand, my mom is high school educated. This is the 80s. This is a pre-internet, pre-Google, pre-YouTube world. One day I come home and I walk up to the house and it's dark out. Things were eerie and everything was silent. And for an Italian-American home, that is not a good sign, yeah. Right? Silence is not good. I walk in and I'm like, where's the sound of the radio? Where is my mom? Tiptoeing around, don't find her. All of a sudden, I hear some clicks and clacks. They're coming from the kitchen. I walk into the kitchen and I see my mom hunched over the kitchen table, which looked like an operating room. There was like screwdrivers and electrical tape. And in about a dozen pieces was a completely dismantled Tropicana orange radio. And I was like, Mom, are you okay? I know this is her favorite thing. She's like, Ree, I'm fine. She's like, the antenna was broke. The dial was a little off. So I'm just fixing my radio. And I stood there, Chris, and I said, hey, Mom, how do you know how to do so many different things that you've never done before, but nobody's showing you how to do it? She put everything down and she looked at me and said, Ree, life is not that complicated. You can do anything you set your mind to. If you roll up your sleeves, you get in there and do it. Everything is figure-outable.
Come on!
And from that moment, that little phrase took root in my soul. And I'll tell you, it's been the single most powerful driving force in my life.
Well, I'll tell you this. I've been doing this for a few years now.
Yeah.
That's the best answer to a single question I've ever come across.
Yes!
Because you told us a story, you told us a story, you told us a story, and then you ended with everything is figure-outable. Which we knew you were going to say, but it didn't make it any less of a moment. Amazing. Do you want to say anything else before you go, Marie?
Well, I will tell you this. There was a chapter that didn't make it into the book that my publisher and my editor were like, we think the book stops here. And I was like, but this is really good. This is the advanced stuff. So anyway, after I got over that little heartbreak, I took the material that didn't make it into the book and I turned it into a free online course. There's no upsells. I just want to give people this material. It teaches them how to embed this belief, everything is figure-outable, into their brain using neuroscience and behavioral science so that it becomes their default operating system.
Right, that's what I'm doing today.
Right? So anyway, if folks go to EIFcourse.com.
EIF?
EIF
course. Say it slow, slow.
E-I-F
dot
course.com.
Sorry, EIFcourse.com.
You can see all the details.
Everybody write this down. And I've got a microphone on this transmitter, but I'm still shouting. EIFcourse.com.
As long as you get the book in any form, Audible, Kindle, you know, paperback, whatever form you like, that gets you free admission to the course. And again, there's no funny business. I just want to make sure that people have the information because this belief has been so transformative to everyone I've shared it with. I want to get it out to as many folks as possible.
You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.